Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Eye Sports Podcasting Network. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the show, one where we're coming at you straight after Zach LaVine just buried the Charlotte Hornets. And here with me today to discuss this, well, that ridiculous shot, that ridiculous win, and this ridiculous set of Bulls games over the last couple of days, he is here with me. It's Morten Jensen. Morten, how are you, mate?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm conflicted at the moment, mate, because I want to be happy, I want to be excited, and I'm a little bit shook right now based on what I just witnessed. I was not expecting a Bulls win. I assumed it was a fat L was coming up. I was drafting a series of tweets on Twitter about how and why the Bulls lost this game, and then all of a sudden, in the space of seconds, they won the game, and I just don't understand this team. I don't understand this season. It's just been a complete mess, but here we are. I have many thoughts, and I'm glad that you are here to share them with me, because it's been an eventful sort of 48 hours for our Bulls.
Yeah, I'll say. Look, you have like the Miami Heat game, and just fair warning, I shut off the Miami Heat game after half a quarter because I just pivot to Luka Doncic these days. If I see the Bulls, and Mavs play at the same time, I just pivot to the Dallas Mavericks these days. I can't help it. Luka is just much more entertaining than seeing Chicago's perimeter defense, pick and roll defense, just like throw five guys out on the ball and are leaving everyone else open. That's not fun. I want to see Luka. So the Heat game, I did not really see. I saw a couple highlights and that was it. But this one, no Dallas game. So from start to finish, and oh boy, many thoughts.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I certainly don't blame you for not tuning into the rest of that Heat game. That was a disaster after that first quarter. Even though I say that the Bulls did technically win the final three quarters, 92-82. I'm sure that's something Jim Boylan will hang his hat on. But yeah, that was a terrible game. The third unit brought the Bulls bench back, or the Bulls back into it. So it should have been a bigger L than the 8 points than what it ended up being. But that was a calamity of affairs. It ultimately led to the whole stoush that Jim Boylan and Zach LaVine had publicly,
right,
through various media channels, be it Jim Boylan through his post-game presser, or Zach LaVine again during his post-game presser. But even he had a Q&A with Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo, where he went back and forth with him about Boylan. So that was an interesting state of affairs, but it ultimately led to what we got today against the Charlotte Hornets, where Zach LaVine was completely cooking. He had 49 points in this game. I had a few people mention to me that he had zero assists in this game, as if that was entirely relevant in a game where he knocks down a franchise record in terms of three-pointers, 13 threes, 13 from 17 threes, as if that having zero assists in this game is somehow a detriment. But Zach LaVine rescued the Bulls. He saved the Bulls. He pulled them out of what was going to be a most definite loss at this point. I think that Stefano tweeted this out just before, but at one point during that fourth quarter, the Hornets had a 99.8% expectancy in terms of winning, but somehow the Bulls found a way to win this game despite the coach doing everything he possibly could to lose them this game. I want to talk about that in more detail a little bit later, but I guess we should start with Zach LaVine and the whole thing that happened with Boylan, but more importantly, maybe what he did to sort of bounce back and put together probably his best game of his career.
Yeah, so I mean, I could be misreading this. This game just felt like a big middle finger to Jim Boylan.
Oh, for sure.
This was about, look, I'm by far the best offensive player on the team. You need to unleash me and do what I do best. I think even back before the season really started, when all the mid-range talk began, I think that kind of soured Zach just a little bit. Not because he necessarily wants to primarily take the mid-range jumper. I think he's embraced the three-point shot a lot. We saw that tonight, especially. But I just think all the talk about his game, like, he needs to be a free flower. And Jim is not really a coach who does that a whole lot. So, yeah, this was a big FU to Boylan, and I like it. I still think that if the Bulls were to choose, they would go with Boylan just because they don't want to save face, even though there's no face left to save. But yeah, I mean, this was very satisfying for Zach LaVine's sake, I feel like.
Yeah, 100%. I'm super happy for Zach because, again, I'm not a Zach believer. I'm not a Zach stan or loyalist or anything of that nature. I do like Levine. I don't love him. Right. I could say the same thing with pretty much every player on this roster beyond maybe Wendell Carter and Ryan Arcidiacono. I don't have a lot of favorites on this team, but I'm happy for him to come out and do what for him to do what he did, because I thought it was completely ridiculous that he was called out and he was the only one made as an example of. Pulling him out after 3 minutes in that Heat game, I thought it was an absolute disgrace from a coaching point of view. I mean, if you're going to be a coach and this season is partly about development, then I don't know what message you're trying to send there or how you're actually coaching a player up in that sense, particularly when in the past you have said and gone on record that you don't pull players, you don't yank players out of the games, and that was Jim Boylan's justification as to why he left his bench unit in against the Los Angeles Lakers a few weeks back. He was here to develop his players through their mistakes on the court, but for whatever reason that didn't apply to right. Zach LaVine against the Heat. I thought that was ridiculous. But then for Zach to come out and to be the one sort of driving force of this Bulls offense and to carry this team home the way he did, I was really happy for Zach LaVine and the fact that he was able to do that. And I'm sure there will be some people out there wanting to give Jim Boylan some credit in terms of getting Zach to this level, I suppose, to get him into this state of mind where he can come out and just wanted to show it to the coach, show it to the world that he actually can be a positive player. But I'm not going to listen to any of that nonsense. It's exactly what it is to me, nonsense. I don't want to hear any of that crap, because this was Zach LaVine doing his own thing. Like I said before, he saved this team from a definite L, and a definite L that was created, in my opinion, because of what the coach was doing with his defensive schemes. I don't know if it's too early to get into it just yet, Mort, but I'm heated about that. It's pissing me off. Like I said, I expected this to be an L. I expected to be talking about another loss. Yeah. Zach saved this team. He saved Jim Boylan. But I don't want to get too carried away, because I don't want this win and Zach's performance to maybe mask what the real issues with this team is. And I sound like a broken record, but I'll say it again. This defensive scheme is completely nonsense.
No, I think it's fair you pointed out. Look, this should have been an L. Look what it took. Look what it took for Zach LaVine to bring this home. 13 threes and 49 points. That's what it took for the Bulls to win against the Charlotte freaking Hornets. Of course, this should have been an L. They completely crapped the tank in the second half, especially in the first quarter. So he did the impossible. So I think it's completely fair that we talk about the defense, which has just been so atrocious. And again, it's the most basic premise. I was in the United Center here last week. I was in Chicago and watched two games. Like, the aggressive pick and roll defense is something that normal coaches, or just like league average coaches, would fix within the first week of the season, not like after the first game, because they just realized, oh crap, we're leaving like multiple players wide open from, you know, above the break or in the corners and whatnot, because we're just throwing the kitchen sink at the ball handler. And yet we're, what, 17 games in, and it's the same thing all over. What are the adjustments being made? I'm not seeing any that are being made. Maybe you've noticed something. I haven't. Granted, I'm up watching Bulls games at 2 to 4 or 5 in the morning even. So maybe I'm not really that awake, but I'm not seeing major differences. Like, it's been the same defense game in and game out since the first game against Charlotte.
Yeah, I think by and large it has remained the same. There have been some differences in the scheme to a degree, maybe in its aggression. Obviously there's been a change with Gafford coming into Cornette, which right. makes it a little bit easier to run this sort of aggressive pick and roll scheme, but by and large, it is the same. The Bulls are still having their center come out and meeting the ball handler for the opposition right at the top of the 3-point line, beyond the 3-point line even. Mm-hmm. So often that's the case. It's Wendell Carter coming out and showing or blitzing really hard beyond the 3-point line with whoever's guarding, in this case, Devontae Graham. And in this game against the Hornets, they just had Cody Zeller or Bismack Biyombo or whoever it was manning that center position just rolling to the rim with pure ease, to the point where that big man was just getting in the lane and finishing at the rim with ease. And on the broadcast, Stacey King was talking about how easy it is for the role player to be getting to the basket the way he is. And it's obvious as to why that is happening, because the Bulls are just doubling the ball it's leaving the big man open, and it's creating rotations and scrambling, or it's forcing the defense to scramble after that ball has sort of entered into the lane. And it's creating problems. It's why the team is constantly mismatched on defense. It's why the rotations are all out of whack or out of sync. There were a few possessions in that first half where it was all humming pretty nicely, but over a 48-minute game, there is going to be breakdowns at some point, and there were crucial breakdowns in that fourth quarter period where the Bulls were down by 2 points at one point, 99-97, but three consecutive possessions that they had, I went back and looked at it, and it all came down to their defensive coverage as to why the Hornets were able to score. And initially, well, the first play was a dump off pass to Biyombo, who scored at the rim, and he scored at the rim because he was completely uncontested, because Wendell Carter had come up to the 3-point line guarding the ball handler. No one guarded, or no one rotated over to help, and he got an easy basket at the rim, as is typically going to be happen against the Bulls when they're sort of facing that type of rim rolling center. But that continued on in the sense that, because Biyombo was such a force as a rim roller, the Bulls started switching their defense, where they had Carter actually switching onto the guard, meaning one of the four guards that Boylan was running out there at the end, for whatever reason, he was playing a four guard lineup to close this game. The Hornets just started switching their bigger guys on the Bulls guards, and they were just getting mismatches all over the court where they were actually botting the Bulls in the lane and just dominating in the paint. So it was just a mismatch of problems, I guess. The defensive scheme all over, whether it was the pick and roll coverage, whether it was Hornets switching their guys onto a favorable matchup. There was points where Ryan Arcidiacono was guarding or trying to box out Biyombo on the block, which is just insane. So the Bulls happened to find themselves down 99-97. All of a sudden, they were down 106-97. And it was because of a string of bad defensive calls, I guess, and that defensive coverage that has been in play for bulk of the season. So I'm heated about that, because like I said, I expected it to be an L, and had this been a loss, I think that would have been a larger talking point than what it is. But I want to continue to raise it, because I think LaVine did his best job to mask the issues that are sort of there with his team right now, and I'm just still frustrated, I guess.
No, I get it. I watch the Hornets broadcast, because I always go to the opponent's broadcast. And they pointed out as well that it was North Carolina versus North Carolina. Like, Marvin Williams would get a switch and just back in Coby White near the rim. Like, those two, you had Coby White guard Marvin Williams near the rim on multiple occasions. Like, eventually, if he burns you a couple times, you need to make an adjustment, and nothing happened. And it is, look, Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, who's a friend of the podcast here, I know, he was on Sam Vecenie's pod recently, and I think he said something to the tune that Jim Boylan may actually be one of the all-time worst coaches in NBA history, just not solely based off the results, even though they were just ghastly, but just with the lack of adjustments, the whole high school coach mentality. I don't think any player out there really respects him. I think they are trying to fight through it and kind of ignore his presence on the sideline. I think they're doing their best, but they need someone to come in and be a coach and say, hey, you know what? We need to switch things up. And it's the same thing. I mean, same shit, different day, all the time. And I wonder if, I wonder where this team is going. Even if if this is still the East, they could make the playoffs. It's still feasible. And even if they win the playoffs, is that a win? Like, I don't even necessarily think it is.
Yeah, I mean, if they get into the playoffs with like a 36-game winning or a winning record type thing, I guess it's an achievement, but it's not a grand one. But yeah, it just bothers me, because this is foundational stuff, or it's fundamental stuff, I should say, that is problematic, that is not going to serve the Bulls long term. And I just don't know why we're going through the charade of this defensive scheme. But it's more than just the defensive scheme. You mentioned it there. It's the rotations as well. And I don't know, again, what he's doing in terms of balancing his rotations between an offense and defensive mix, because there was countless, I guess, lineups today where Boylan had an all-defensive mix out there where he would have, I think during the second quarter even, there was a lineup where he had Chris Dunn, Ryan Arcidiacono, Thad Young, Daniel Gafford, and some other guard. I'm forgetting which other guard it was. I probably should go back and look at that.
He could have been. Yeah, Coby was in with that lineup for a while, but you're right. I think Sato
Was the Shaq. It was Kobe, but it was Shaq Harrison as well. That's the name.
Oh my god! I didn't even notice that.
He was obviously starting this game at small forward, but there was a lineup where he had Shaq out with those four defensive players. Didn't even have Kobe White or Zach LaVine to carry that offensive unit. And how do you watch this, or how do you implement that lineup and think that that's going to be a functional lineup that works when there's actually no offensive creator out there on the perimeter? And of course, that lineup struggled to score. The Bulls gave up a 6-0 run at that point as well, allowing the Hornets to close the lead from, I think it was double digits at that point in the second quarter, to at least a 7-point lead. So there's just things like that where Boylan is doing his best to make this Bulls team lose as many games as possible. I mean, if the Bulls were tanking, Boylan would be a fantastic coach right now, but it's just frustrating to watch because it annoys me that a player like LaVine, a flawed player like LaVine, a player who deserves his share of criticism, a player who hasn't been good this season, he gets roasted publicly by the coach, who is more than happy to throw his players under the bus, takes no accountability for himself at all. Meanwhile, Zach is the one post-game taking accountability, saying he's never been a winning player and that he's sick of losing, and that the fact that he's trying to work on his game. He comes out here, drops 49, does his thing, but here the coach is still trying to manufacture ways for this team to drop games, and it's just freaking pissing me off, Morty. I've had enough, mate. I've had enough.
I think we've had enough for a while. I just want to point out, it's not just Boylan. I mean, obviously, we can't sit here and say the players have no faults. I mean, obviously.
Of course.
Just mentioned, Zach LaVine is an imperfect player. Lauri Markkanen, I've heard there are some back issues from a source over here. I have not gotten secondary or double confirmation on that, by the way. But so just take that with a grain of salt. But he's not been playing well. He's been playing very inconsistently. He has really had a hard time just getting to the basket, and that was one of his strengths. Sato, as much as I love Sato, he's very passive. He's been more aggressive recently, but he's a guy who should take more shots and should be more involved in the offense, and he's just not. You have Wendell Carter Jr., who is getting a tough whistle, but is also still picking up a lot of fouls just by, you know, reaching in and doing some dumb stuff. But he's young, so it's understandable. But yeah, I mean, we went into this year thinking this is a development year. They should be better because now there are some adults in the room. I think that was the term, like Thaddeus Young and Zero and all those guys. So, but it hasn't materialized in the way that we all thought it would. This has been a very odd year, and it's reminiscent of the year where Pau Gasol's first year with the Bulls, if you remember. Like, suddenly it was Pau and Jimmy Butler who had a breakout year, and those two were the primary drivers, and everyone was like, wait, where did that come from? Because everyone thought that Rose would be, you know, the guy once again, and he wasn't. This seems to be one of those years where everything you thought coming into the year that would be relevant, it's just not. It's weird. I found out that going into this game, Markkanen had only scored 33 points more on the year than Kobe White. This game, Kobe White was plus 25 in the scoring column for Markkanen. So he's closing in on being the second leading scorer on this team. That's not a good thing. That is not a good thing. And this is where we're at. You need some adults in the room, but you need some adults on the sidelines as well. And right now it's not there.
Yeah, 100%. Kobe White was great in this game too. 12 of 19 from the field, 63.2% field goal percentage, 28 points off the bench, played 34 minutes, and he was really good for the Bulls. He kept the team in it, and this game actually felt a lot like the Memphis Grizzlies game in the sense that it was Zach and Kobe really keeping the team in it, and there was those two sort of taking their turns to just hold the offense afloat to the point where the team could stay in it and get the win late. So in that way, it was sort of reminiscent of that game. And in that particular game as well, Markkanen wasn't good. And I honestly don't know what the hell is wrong with Lauri Markkanen. He had a decent game the other day, but he continues to look pretty average, to the point where I have no idea what is going on with Lauri at all. I've never seen a player drop off this hard before, ever, to the point where I can't assume it's purely just, you know, scheme for whatever reason taking him out of the game. I think there is the scheme to blame for certain things. I think he's obviously playing more on the perimeter, but at the same time, I don't know. Is it an injury? Is it something else? Is there something going on inside his head that we're not aware of? Is it all of the above? Is there another reason that I'm not considering? I don't know what the answer is, but this is not a version of Lauri Markkanen any of us have ever seen before. I think this is unprecedented to an extent of seeing a player just fall off this hard. His numbers, I mean, obviously his percentages are terrible, but his box score numbers are still okay in the sense that it's, you know, a 14-8 or whatever it might be. So it doesn't read as bad as what it probably looks, but or what it's been looking like during the games themselves. But I mean, look, there is something seriously wrong with Lauri to the point where I'm questioning if he's hurt, and if he is hurt, then why the hell is he out there? Because it's not doing him or the team any good. And I really just don't know what's going on with Lauri at all.
Yeah, no, I would sit him for a couple of games, even if nothing is wrong with him. Like, again, I've hurt his back, but again, one source. So, but even if he's fully healthy, I would still sit him a couple of games, and not as punishment, but as a way of just recalibrating him. Like, just sit him on the bench, you know, talk to him. Maybe you may be sacrificing a couple games. Like, look, the Bulls aren't good, so you might not even. But just have him on the bench, observe a couple things, and talk to him, and just give him some a breath of fresh air by not being under the spotlight for a couple of games. And then ease him back into the lineup, see what happens. At this point, that's all I got. I don't know what else to do. Like, you're starting him, you're giving him minutes, you're giving him shots. He's not producing right now. And ultimately, I think he just needs to be out of the lineup for a little while.
Yeah, it's weird. He only had the 24 minutes against the Hornets. He wasn't good against the Heat either. So, I mean, he was decent against the Detroit Pistons. But again, I talked about it with Jason, but the Pistons were rolling with obviously Blake Griffin, who looks like a shell of his former self. He does not look healthy at all, and Andre Drummond was not engaged at all against the Bulls. So Lauri had a good game against the Pistons, but he was making his shots. But in games where he's not making his shots, he's not offering you much else at all. So I don't know what's happening with Lauri. Yeah, it's weird, it's strange, it's concerning, and I don't want the Bulls to be too critical in the sense, and I don't personally want to be too critical of Lauri, because I have that in the back of my head that maybe he's carrying an injury. But at the same time, if certain players are going to be scapegoated and put to task like LaVine was, then if Lowry's out there playing, then he, I guess, deserves some share of the criticism as well. And I think he has skirted by with some to a degree. One, maybe because we, like I said, in the back of our minds, we're sort of questioning if he is hurt. But if he isn't, then that is truly problematic. And I guess he's getting by because he's got more cachet, he's got more goodwill. His perception around Bulls fans is probably a lot higher than what it is for someone like Zach LaVine. So I don't know. He deserves his share of blame. But at the same time, if he's hurt, I don't know what to do, but apart from sitting him, getting Thad Young some more minutes. Thad wasn't great against the Hornets, but he only played 13 minutes in this game. I don't know why Thad doesn't play more. He hasn't been good. He's been disappointing thus far during his Bulls career. But again, if you're playing Thad Young in rotations where he's literally out there with three or four guards who can't create shots, then it's pretty tough to ask someone like Thad Young to carry a second unit offense as well. But maybe he looks better if he starts this game. But yeah, it's strange. I don't know what's happening with Lauri Markkanen. I wonder if Boylan can do some different things in terms of the rotations, you know, having him more in the second unit. We talked about that second unit having no offensive creation at all. Maybe if you put Lauri Markkanen in that second unit and stagger Lauri and Markkanen, maybe that can help kickstart his season if in fact he isn't hurt. But yeah, beyond that, I'm just riffing on ideas without really knowing what the root cause is.
No, I agree. I think it's very important that Markkanen gets, you know, easy tasks in front of him. Like, being set up against like an all-star front court is just not a key for success at this moment. I don't know if you should necessarily, if you want to play him, I don't think you should necessarily bench him, because I don't think that goes over well. If he's already frustrated and if he's in his own head, that's not going to improve it. But then you need to like start him if that brings any like stability to him. And then you need to like take him out of the game like midway through the first quarter and then bring him back when you see the opponents have basically an all bench lineup out there. Then that's when you bring him back and you just kind of pounded inside near the basket for him to get some layups or something. The fact that he's been seeking that 3-point shot so much also just suggests that his body's not right and he's not moving all that well either. So it's just such a weird situation. I mean, I think we can agree that this is not like the Lauri Markkanen moving forward. Like, we've seen him play better previously. Like, he's not going to regress out of nowhere. That's just completely illogical to expect that. I think ultimately he will play better, It's just a question of when. I don't think this is the new Markkanen moving forward. But when the last year's version is going to show up, no idea. And that obviously has a huge effect on the wins and the losses and what the Bulls are hoping to accomplish this year. And honestly, isn't that what it comes down to? Like, what do they want to do? If they want to make a playoff push, then the answer is Thad Young, like right now. I don't know where they're at. I mean, I have no idea.
No, I completely agree. I thought about writing about this, but I'm confused as to what this season is meant to be. And you just touched on it. Is it meant to be a developmental year? If it is, then obviously it's problematic because Lowry has been, you know, worse than what he was as a rookie. Obviously, Zach LaVine has had his troubles. A lot of players have regressed to an extent. But then if it's not a development year, it's about getting to the playoffs. And obviously, the win-loss record is problematic as well. So depending on what avenue you want to go down, it hasn't been great for the Bulls. But I mean, just coming back to this game as well.
Yeah.
We were on the verge of this team being 5-12. Had Zach LaVine not gone absolutely berserk. Yeah, the Bulls scored 47 points in the fourth quarter. They were down by 8 points with 45 seconds left. You don't win games when you're down by 8 points with 45 seconds left. That just doesn't happen. But then, whatever reason, Zach LaVine happened. He willed this team with a win with his shooting. 13 made threes, one behind the NBA record. Scored 27 points in the fourth quarter, three shy of Michael Jordan's Bulls record. I mean,
that's insane. That's insane.
It's so improbable that the Bulls won this game, but LaVine, again, he saved this team. And I just want to reiterate that point because this should have been an L. Everything was pointing to this being a loss. The way the Bulls were rotating and running the defensive coverage was going to guarantee a loss. The way their rotations were set up, running a four-guard lineup and getting abused by mismatches all through that fourth quarter is a perfect way to set up a loss. But then for whatever reason, Zach LaVine was just caught on fire. He was on fire the whole damn game, but he saved the Bulls in that final quarter. And yeah, he really is the story this weekend. It started with the whole Boylan thing and now it ends like this, and I wonder how Boylan's feeling about it. And like I said, I don't want to hear any nonsense about the coach fueling LaVine into this because I think that's a load of crap. But yeah,
he's probably going to make bizarre. That point. Jim Boylan is like in the post gamer. I wouldn't be surprised one way or the other that he's like, yeah, I said some stuff to Zach to just lit a fire under his ass, and look, he produced. Look, I'm great. Look at me.
No, well, so see, that's the thing. I think if it's going to come from anywhere, it's going to become a narrative driven by certain people. But I think post-game, Boylan was okay about it. He was more than happy to give Zach all that credit. But as is always the case with the Bulls, it's never about the result for me. It's always about the process. And I just don't understand why you have to call out Zach like that the way you did. I don't know why they have to do certain things the way they do them. If they just run a tight ship and just get things in order and maybe call a timeout during that Heat game and actually talk to LaVine about what he's doing rather than sort of sending him a message by benching his ass and then, you know, going on a tirade post-game and making him look foolish. I don't know why we have to do this song and dance, but it is always a drama with the Bulls. But here we are. We got the W, I suppose. And now the team sits 6-11, and then their next three games are against the Portland Trail Blazers, the Golden State Warriors, and then the Blazers again. So those three games against three West teams where we would typically said they were going to be guaranteed L's, but based on the way that the seasons have sort of gone for the Blazers and the Warriors, they could potentially be wins for the Bulls to the point where all of a sudden 6-11 could turn into 9-11 if the Bulls capitalize and actually play some good solid basketball and actually look like a complete team just operating with proper fundamentals. Obviously, that in itself is a big ask, but they have an opportunity here to actually go on a little bit of a streak. Obviously, they lost that game against the Heat, but if they can go on a 4-game win streak or even a 3-1 record here over the next three, or including that Charlotte game, then all of a sudden this season could be righted to a degree. Obviously, it's going to be a problematic towards the back end of the season where the schedule tightens up. That February and March schedule is quite brutal. But if they can get back to 500 before the end of December is done, then the season isn't lost. It can be salvaged. Obviously, up until this point, it's been a complete mess, but there's still a slight chance that this can get back onto the right track here.
I mean, I love your optimism. The way I look at it is...
See red, baby.
Yeah. I mean, I just look at it as it took Zach LaVine going completely ape to get a one-point win over the Charlotte Hornets.
I mean, You're not wrong.
I mean, and it took Kobe White as well. I mean, at 12 of 19 shooting, that's not something he's going to do every night. It took a good Wendell Carter game. It actually took Wendell Carter being able to stay on the floor for 34 minutes. I mean, so many things went right as well, and they were about to lose it. I just have no faith whatsoever in this team moving forward. I just don't, and I'm not trying to be negative Nancy, but what have they shown us at any point this season where you feel like, oh, the next couple of games, they should be gimmies? Like, none. They could easily lose by 20, 25, 30 points to the Golden State Warriors, who are missing virtually everyone. That wouldn't even surprise me. Like, Kai Bowman could go for 35 against them. Like, it's all plausible. It's such a weird team. I'm appreciating what Zach did right now. That's what I'm left with. And I appreciate the way that he did it, because he tied Steph Curry's record, Steph Curry's own personal record with 13 threes. And it was done in very similar fashion. I don't know if you remember that game a couple years back when Steph hit the 13 threes. That was against OKC. He came down, and like at the very end of the game, he pulled up for like 38 feet or something like that. He just drained it. That was the shot 13, and that was the backbreaker, and they won the game. So it's in a very similar fashion, which I appreciate. I'm very happy for Zach right now. I think him getting thrown under the bus that way was just low and demeaning and dumb. And I think he's been, like, I don't think he's been good this year, but I think he's been maligned way too much online to the point where it's just been ridiculous. So good on Zach. I'm still not optimistic whatsoever about the Bulls, because I'll tell you something. We went into the UC against the Nets. No Kyrie Irving, no Caris LeVert, no Kevin Durant. Like, my son, his first Bulls game there was like, Daddy, they might actually win. And I was like, you know what, son? They might. They actually might. And despite actually getting to the line 41 times and shooting almost 93%, they somehow managed to lose that game. So you know what? I'm not there. At no point for the rest of the year, I'm going, oh, that should be a gimme. Nope, not there.
No, I mean, fair enough. And yeah, I mean, Bruce is going to learn the hard way, I suppose, at some point. But
what he did for the next game when we went to, because we were watching the Bucks game as well. So on our way there, he looked at me. He was like, Daddy, I think the Bulls are going to lose by 41 points.
Well, there you go. It didn't take him long, but he's been conditioned. But I mean, you're totally right. I mean, there's no real reason to be an optimist. But having said that, and I wouldn't consider myself an optimist, but for the next three games, I think they should be favored based on how bad the season has gone for the Blazers and the Warriors. This should be potential for the Bulls to easily at least go 2-1 over the next three. That's all I'm asking for. If you can go 3-0, that would be nice. But if at least grab two of the next three games, get to 8-12 at least. Call the first 20 games or the first quarter of the season at that point. You're almost at 500. Just get your shit together. Get your defensive coverage. At least play a more conservative defensive coverage. And then slowly but surely, things will start to get back together. We'll see what happens with the Lowry marketing issue. I think that is obviously going to be a talking point beyond the first 20 games. But there's still potential here for this team to right the ship to a degree. I don't think playoffs is likely, but just don't play miserable, dumb basketball. That's all I ask for. Just don't out-execute yourself. Don't be stupid. Don't do stupid things on defense to the point where you're costing yourself wins from that point of view. So
don't do what they did 55 minutes ago?
Yeah, exactly. Don't do that dumb shit and just play some good, sensible basketball, please. That's all I'm asking for. But yeah, look, that's pretty much all I've got for now. I'm a little bit all over the place because I don't know what to make of this Bulls team. Like you sort of alluded to, it took a historic performance from Zach LaVine for the Bulls just to scrape past a fun to watch but still bad Charlotte Hornets team. So you have to take that context into it. Obviously, we talked about the bad defense and the coverage and all that sort of stuff. That still needs to be factored into it. It shouldn't be lost in all this, but I think for one night, I'm pretty content with being happy for Zach LaVine and the yeah. fact that he got to shove it up the coach's ass. I think that was nice to see.
Then let's end on another positive note. Wendell Carter Jr.'s corner three-pointer.
Yes, good point. He drilled that corner three.
That was so clean.
Yeah, it looks sweet. It's in his bag. I don't know why he's been told to put it away. I'm assuming he's been told to put it away. That's my theory, at least. I'm speculating on that, but I'm going with it. He's been told to put away his jump shot. I don't know why. He can shoot it. Let him shoot it. He's always been able to shoot it. Let it fly.
Yeah.
Again, this, but I'm finding every single way of blaming Boylan for everything at this point, which I'm certainly biased. But yeah, that was a beautiful three from Big Wendell, who, again, continues to show that he is the heart and soul of this team. 17 points, 11 rebounds against the Hornets. Five offensive rebounds.
Finally, players are making shots off of his passes. I actually wrote an article on Forbes about him, and I dug into the numbers, and I realized he's been passing the ball a lot. Guys who are receiving his passes are just flat out missing jump shots. So it's nice to see when guys are connecting off of his passes, because like he had some gems tonight as well. Like he is a quick passer when he sees the court. This guy, look, I don't even care about the Bulls results. I'm just keying in on this guy for the rest of the year. Wendell Carter is my jam.
100%. I mean, Wendell is one of my favorite Bulls in a long time. He's the best thing to happen to this franchise since Jimmy Butler came around. So I'm very pleased with the way Wendell is progressing in his sophomore season. I think that the second half of the season will be even better for him. But just let Wendell be Wendell, Jim. That's all I ask of you. But look, that's enough for today. Enough ranting on this one, Moore. I appreciate you coming on, mate. Tell the people where they can follow you online. They already know, but just hit the plug anyway.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. So you can find me on Twitter at MSJNBA. And I'm also the co-host of the NBA podcast with Brian Toporek. You can find that at the NBA pod. We're on iTunes and Spotify and Spreaker and Stitcher and every Google podcast and everything you can possibly imagine. We're there. And I write for Forbes. So if you just Google my name and Forbes, you'll find a lot of my content.
Too easy. People should be doing all of that. But I appreciate you coming on, mate, talking about Zach LaVine, talking Boylan and his coverages, and talking about this improbable win. It was a weird one, but I'm glad they got the W, and I'm glad you were able to join me on this one.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. It's always a blast.
No problem, mate. But that just about does it for this episode of Bulls HQ. Bulls fans, thank you for tuning in. A frustrated one where I let my emotions probably get the best of me, but hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Follow me on Twitter at MK Hoops. Follow the show on Twitter too at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to send me an email or be part of the Bulls HQ Discord forum, drop me an email, bullshq@gmail.com. Hit me up for the link for that if you want to be part of it, which I definitely want you to do. But appreciate you for tuning into this episode of Bulls HQ. Hopefully we'll be back later on this week talking more Bulls, and hopefully we're talking about a few more W's, but fingers crossed, who knows with this team. But thank you for joining me on this episode. Speak soon.